weeks of fetching water at the gas station up, up at Dunbar.
Yeah, right.
But it, when they brought those three standpipes down this way, there was one standpipe where the Guerins were. If I remember correctly. Because there were one, there was Ed Guerin's house, Willie Guerin's house, and Johnny Guerin's house, all in one lump.
Oh, yeah.
And then Andrew Charlie, just a little ways away from there. So we would do all of that, trying to learn how to be who we are, and just being kids, and making sure we didn't destroy any vegetables.
Yeah, I understand that some kids were rascally and burned the boxes at the ends of the greenhouses. And
those are the ones that went to residential school.
Oh, I see.
Those are the kids.
Wow.
They're the ones that threw rocks at the greenhouses.
Oh, dear.
They learned how to break things.
Uh-oh. Out of frustration.
I don't know if it's out of frustration or lack of respect for other people's property.
Right.
And those other people were different people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not Aboriginal.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Orientals.
That's right.
I can remember breaking one greenhouse glass. And my mother brought me up there and brought me in front of the old people that owned the greenhouse.
Yeah.
I never broke another one.
Wow,
ever.
I bet.
And they, just being admonished and being made responsible for that, I couldn't do it anymore.
No.
So we used to do that. And in the wintertime, we used to play around on the ice. Ice used to form around here.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. And we'd be fooling around playing hockey, try to play hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Especially up there at the dam on Tin Can Creek.
Oh,
there was a little dam there.
Oh.
That dam was maybe a meter high. That was so the piggery could have water for their slaughterhouse, and the pigs. There were two piggeries down here.
Oh yeah, who had those?
Wong had one.
Wong?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's the one on 51st by the creek.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember exactly who had the other piggery, and it's up on Salish. Pretty close to where Stotlow is.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I have that in my notes somewhere.
The old maps would show who it is. There was Hop Chung up there, and another, but there were two farms up that way.
Yeah.
Two little farms.
Mm-hmm. Hop Chung
was one of them.
This woman who said, who was born, she said that she lived near, she was so far from the reserve, she was near Red Beach. We lived at, is that where the Grant farm was, over to the west? Or?
Well, the Grant, my grandpa had some property up there. Stogan, old Jack Stogan had an allocation up there.
That's their landlord, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That old Jack Stogan's land allocation was there. My grandfather was next to him. James Point was east of him.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I'm not sure who had that one allocation in the middle there, and then there was Andrew Charlie.
Wow, that's interesting.
And that was on the top side?
Mm-hmm.
Like along bordering Marine Drive.
Oh, yeah. I heard there was a terrible fire up there.
There was a couple of fires up there. There was a fire at that house, at that farm.
Oh,
on Stogan's allocation. That would be around 1958, somewhere in that era.
Right.
Because I can remember running from, because I had built a house up there, a little tiny little house up there for my mother. And I can remember running from that house to Ed Gern's house, who had the telephone at the top end, and phoning the fire department from there. And get no response from the Vancouver Fire Department. Said, you're under UBC jurisdiction. So phone the UBC Fire Department. They said, no, I can't do anything for you. You're in the city of Vancouver jurisdiction.
Oh, yeah, sure.
In the meantime, it's burning down anyways. They didn't respond until too late.
Yeah.
You know, maybe an hour or so later.
Oh, dear.
So it didn't matter. They wasn't their jurisdiction.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah. So that's stuff we did in the summertime. As kids, we played around, learned how to make and do things. You know, just like kids, average kids. Learned to eat all the vegetation around.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Learned to eat the grasses that grow in the flats, in the tidal flats.
Oh.
Learned to eat the shoots that were growing in the woods.
Oh,
what were edible and what wasn't edible at the time.
Right.
However, Mom had said at that time, shouldn't be eating it anyways. It's no good anymore. It's been polluted.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But if you're somewhere, anywhere else, and you're wandering around, just showing you this so that you know what's edible and what isn't.
Good idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was Mom's way of preparing us in case we had gone away somewhere.
You got lost in the woods somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it was still acreage in Point Grey area at that time.
Right.
There were still half acre or 1 acre lots.
You know, what time would that have been? What years would that have been?
That would be in the '50s.
Okay.
Forties when we were little kids.
Uh-huh.
It was still acreage in the '50s, early '50s.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were no homes up in that area.
Right.
There were no homes on Crown Street. One of the first ones was Charlie Farrell, who was one block east of Crown.
Mm-hmm.
Then the first house on Crown, I believe, was Nellgrove. Where's Nellgrove? Where those two new houses are going up on Crown Street.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next house on this is below Marine Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Was the big white house on the corner, Crown and Marine.
Oh, fancy.
It was around 1949 when that went up. So there was nothing there.
Nothing much, so what's
nothing. There was nothing up at Dunbar.
No.
You go along 51st, two spinster ladies lived in that empty field where the blackberry bushes are.
Uh-huh.
There were two spinster ladies there.
Well.
Mom used to go and have tea there.
Oh.
When we were kids.
Uh-huh.
She'd go and have tea and talk, sit and talk, probably a couple hours.
White ladies?
Yeah, two white ladies.
The ladies, nice.
Yeah.
There was a lot more interaction in the old days,
lots
wasn't there?
Lot of interaction.
Yeah.
Well, people were interdependent at that time.
Yes. Well, I'm very pleased to see the young people come around selling carvings now.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Mm-hmm. So those two old ladies, they were spinster ladies, and that's the same as Charlie Farrell. There was two brothers that on just east of Crown, living in a stable.
Huh.
They lived in a stable which was or set up like a, how I would call a boat. Because every piece of storage space there was utilized.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh.
And they slept in a loft.
Oh, how interesting.
While they were building a house, mm-hmm. and I don't know if that house exists today or not. Mm-hmm. To me at that time, it was a huge house. It mm-hmm. was two stories with an attic.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, huge, yeah.
Interesting.
Then up Dunbar, there were no homes on Dunbar below Marine Drive. Mm-hmm. There were no homes between Marine Drive and 41st. Because we used to walk through the trails to the Red and White store.
Oh, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. To behind the Red and White store. Because uh-huh. then there was the house built on 42nd at Dunbar. Mm-hmm. And then the White House next door, across the street, there's a sort of an American colonial
type
house there.
Yes, that's an interesting one, yeah.
That one went up in the 50s also. But there was nothing on Dunbar.
No.
There was no Safeway, which is
that's
in Scotiabank.
Right. That's Scotiabank, yeah. Did uh-huh. you remember Mr. Pyatt's?
Mr. Pyatt, mm-hmm. Mr. Hyams.
Mr. Hyams.
And the Red and White.
Uh-huh.
Then there was the new place with Gus's place.
Gus's, yeah, Cafe Cafe, I
uh-huh.
guess.
Mm-hmm. And then the other cafe at the end of the block where the hardware store is now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was another restaurant.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
I remember Mr. Trim's when we first moved here in 65. Mr. Trim was uh-huh. about there. So.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In that place, you know?
Yeah, sort of in that area. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out where it was. You know, it's just a five and dime store.
Then there was the post office. Yeah. Where the empty lot is there
oh,
now.
Oh, is that where it was?
That's right. Okay. That's where it was, yeah.
Oh, I see.
There was a dry goods store there.
Oh, yeah.
That was a dry goods store.
Interesting.
And post office. Because the missus sold sewing materials and threads and needles.
Oh,
and he had the post office, post office 13.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. And I can't remember exactly what, whether that was another house or an empty lot where the Mac store is.
Oh, yeah.
And across the street where the Chevron is,
uh-huh.
There was
the Blue Moon,
Blue Moon
uh-huh.
a bakery, and then two spaces, and then Hoyt.
What was that called?
The Hoyt.
Hoyt, oh,
Chinese
H-O-Y.
Store.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And then the store in between, or another storefront. Then the Mayfair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, either that or I got them transported.
It could be the Mayfair's
yeah.
the other direction. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And that church was always there for a while.
Yeah, the church was there. Came quite late, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that Safeway was the second Safeway in Vancouver.
Well.
The first one was at Hastings and Gore.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The
very first Safeway.
Huh.
I remember it going up.
Yeah.
Oh. And you had to supply your own bags.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, at that time.
They should do it again.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And there was really nothing along 51st,
hmm.
other than Hyams, the Red and White store, mm-hmm. the gas station. Nothing on the side where, well, the pharmacy was there.
That's at Nightingale.
Nightingale, yeah.
Nightingale,
because
yeah.
you could go in there for sodas.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Just like Pyatt's.
Uh-huh,
you
I
can
see.
Do the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Streetcar.
You'd come in there, streetcar, and the next set of stores was Caresdale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then the Japanese store.
Oh.
41st and Carnarvon, I believe it is, right across the street from the private school.
Right, 41st and Carnarvon. Okay,
yeah.
So that was a Japanese store?
Yeah, in the basement.
Oh, for goodness sake, I didn't know that.
In the basement of the store. of that house. I mean, they were Japanese people, and they had a store in the basement floor, the ground floor.
Yeah. Interesting.
Then that flat roof house across the street, heading east, went up in the 50s also.
Oh, yeah.
It was an empty lot, and also, boom, it went up.
Interesting. I had evidently was at Balaclava and 41st for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Right near, they lived right across from the Lost Church.
Yeah.
And then they moved into the store at 41st and Dunbar.
See, then the streetcar lines came down Dunbar and along 41st, and they intersected there, and they turned around and went back.
Yeah.
In the summertime, there was the tour cars, the open gondola cars.
Yeah, that observation car.
Yeah, would come down, and young kids would sing and dance in front of pipes.
Oh, yeah.
And people on the car would throw pennies or nickels. The ones that had money.
Yes.
And
I was trying to get a picture of somebody doing some dancing, but it's impossible. I can't. Nobody. They must have all been tourists from somewhere else.
And some of our kids that had gone to boarding school would go pick up those nickels and
pennies. Well, they would.
But in our culture, if somebody throws money at you on the ground, that's an insult.
Interesting. Put you in another class.
Yep. And when I first saw the money being thrown, I went to grab it as a little boy.
Yes.
And my mother slapped my hand.
Wow.
And made me throw it back on the ground.
Is that right?
Don't you ever touch money that's thrown at you.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
That's an insult.
Interesting.
And the young people that had gone to boarding school and did not have that teaching, they became part of the beggar system.
The greedy system.
Well, they're beggars.
Yeah.
You're singing and dancing, you're supplying a service, but then you're standing there as a beggar picking up money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was the reason you don't. That's an insult.
That's right, an insult, yeah. Oh.
You're not that poor, you need to pick up money that's thrown at
you. Right.
Regardless of how empty your stomach is.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Because you're standing in front of a pious store and you pick up 3 cents, you can go into the store and buy something to eat.
Yeah, pretty nice.
Yeah.
I've talked to white kids, you know, who had actually made a pretty good living singing and dancing because during the Depression they didn't have money.
Uh-huh.
They were really.
Well,
they
were supplying a service.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That's different.
Yeah,
you're supplying a service.
That's true.
But if you're just standing there and people are throwing money in your direction, that's an insult in our culture.
Yeah.
That many of our people don't realize that today.
No.
Because they never grew up with that, with that deep cultural teaching. People throw money on the floor in a big house in the long house ceremony because spiritual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people pick it up and you just throw it. Throw your wealth away. And our mother would never touch the money.
Interesting.
Our grandmother wouldn't touch it. Don't touch it. Yeah.
But in a potlatch, you would touch the
not
gift
even
that.
The gifts. That are handed to you,
yes,
but not the gifts that are thrown.
So I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
A lot of stuff is thrown.
Like the blankets were thrown.
Yeah.
And the,
yeah.
Oh, and so that was.
Don't worry about it.
Oh,
you
is that
you don't
right?
need it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But still, some people grab it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And that's part of it too, but it's to show the other people. You don't need that.
Yeah.
It's part of your family thing. You don't do that. And you don't need to do that. You know? Some people need to do that. So then they're the ones who can do that if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And straight away here.
That's right.
By the time I was 11, in the summertime, I was working alongside of my mother, weeding in the garden, the vegetable garden, the vegetable fields.
Were you heading some?
10 hours a day.
Wow.
In the summertime, weeding, school's out, 11 years old,
wow.
6 days a week, getting paid adult wages.
All good.
Because my work was of the same,
same worth or the same?
I was doing the same amount of work as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't too sure until they watched me work by the second week.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was producing the same amount of work.
Great.
As an adult, so I got paid adult wages.
Great. Excellent.
At other times, we used to go as a group with the kids that came home from boarding school, go picking peas, things like that, for farmers up on the hill. But that was contract work, so much a pound, and that was very difficult work compared to weeding. So I never liked that. And the only time I got treated badly was there was a farmer on the Blenheim Flats, an Irishman, who used to come to the farm over here and teach English to some of the adult farmers. One of those years I had gotten over to his farm and asked him if he needed anyone to weed. And I forget who was with me, one of the other boys. And we were weeding his patch, and we weeded for about 3 days, finished that patch, went to see him. And he refused to pay what he had agreed to.
Oh, dear.
And that was one and the only time any farmer in this area had ever treated me badly.
Oh, boy.
And it had to be an Irishman.
Yes,
on
right.
On the Blenheim Flats.
Dear me.
Yeah. That's before all the horse people got there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
interesting. Would it have been one of the McCleary's then, or...?
No. This was, the McCleary's are further
east.
That's
right, yeah.
Yeah. This was right at the Blenheim Flats.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple of blocks up from Celtic.
Yeah.
And, I forget. Because there was another family there there was an old lady and her daughter, that took care of horses all the time at that time.
Uh-huh.
They were really the only horse people at that time.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then there was this huge influx after.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for a couple of summers.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I was 13, I'd become a gas jockey after school in the summertime.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
At Georgia and Gore Shell Station.
Mm-hmm.
And worked there for... until I was 15.
Hmm.
And then when I turned 16, got a driver's license, and drove a truck in the summertime for Hoy's Produce in Vancouver.
Hoy's,
downtown.
Uh-huh.
The wholesaler, he was at Georgia and Gore also.
Oh, yeah.
But I would be driving between here and Chiam, which is Rosedale.
Oh, yeah.
On a daily basis, 6 days a week.
Wow.
Maybe 14 hours a day.
Oh.
So,
work.
I did that for a couple of summers.
Mm-hmm.
The one summer I worked as a deckhand for Bill Guerin.
Oh, really?
On the Musqueam.
Oh.
Musqueam 2.
Musqueam 2.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of boat was that?
That was a fish collector.
Fish, like a fish packer?
A little, small fish packer.
Yeah.
They called collector.
Collector, okay.
There was the designation.
Mm-hmm.
For, contract to BC Packers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's that sealed it. So those are the kind of things.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. A lot of experience. Now, do the kids today have opportunities for that kind of job? Or?
Not really, because the commercial fishing is very, very short now.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't eat gas jockeys anymore.
No,
everyone's self-serve.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I don't know if anybody would work for entry-level wages for 10 to 12 hours a day.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. And all I ever learned was you don't have anything in your pocket. So $5 in your pocket is worth more than nothing in your pocket. And not only that, there are no social assistance programs in those days.
That's right.
My mother was never ever on social assistance.
Isn't that amazing? That's right.
She survived all her life on whatever pennies that she could work for. And it's truly amazing that as adults we began to see how little she had financially.
Mm-hmm.
That when a lady finally gets to the age of 65 and gets a pension of around $200 a month, that she becomes rich.
That's right, exactly.
She becomes rich.
Yeah.
That's how little money she ever owned in her life.
That's amazing.
That she, when she became an old age pensioner, didn't know what to do with that amount of money.
That's right, you don't know. You don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. And she said, why do they keep sending me money? Because I already have $300 that will do me for the whole year. And you say, well, Mom, it's $200 a month whether you spend it or not.
Yeah.
But you got to cash the checks.
Yeah.
And she couldn't figure that out.
Isn't that
she had
amazing.
Never.
She didn't travel or do anything.
No.
Isn't that amazing?
She had never, ever received that money
for
doing nothing.
That's it.
She says, why are they giving me money for doing nothing?
Right.
She couldn't understand that.
Mm.
And yet today, because of the social programs introduced by the Canadian government to all of the Canadians,
right.
We have a segment that relies on it.
Right.
And it's something that takes away your, I don't know if... your ability
to do for yourself.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
I think
yes,
so.
Yeah. And when I was, 13, 14, 15, a couple of summers, the year that I was fish collecting with Bill Guerin, I drove my mother up to Sardis to Cottonwood Corners.
Mm-hmm.
The highway goes through the farm now at Cottonwood Corners.
Wow.
It was a hop yard.
Oh, it was a hop yard there.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that hop yard became the mall, and part of that hop yard became a drive-in theater. It's right at the interchange.
I see.
And it was, and probably where Tim Hortons is right now on that interchange,
uh-huh.
was the Indian village, Indian campsite.
Is that right?
Yeah.
For the hop yard.
For the hop yard, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
So I was up there for a couple of summers,
uh-huh.
part of a couple of summers, I should say,
uh-huh.
and learned about that.
That's good.
How you can be exploited.
Oh.
In the sense that they made sure you got the least amount of money for the maximum amount of work. In harvesting of the hops for the beer industry.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So I learned that.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated from high school in 1955... I wanted to be originally a civil engineer.
Mm.
However, university education was out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
So I had made up my mind to become a mechanic. However, when I graduated from high school, there were no apprenticeships available, except in Prince George or Alberta.
Oh, fantastic.
So I became a machinist, automotive machinist, which I did not want to be, because although I had the aptitude for that type of work, it was something that didn't interest me.
Right, yeah.
And I became a machinist for 11 years. And then worked a year and a half with BC Packers as a boat mechanic. And when I got laid off from there, I got on as a longshoreman.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And became a heavy-duty mechanic in the longshore industry.
Oh, my goodness. So you like that better?
I liked the money. I didn't like the kind of attitude and atmosphere that prevailed at that time, because I was trained to be an all-around tradesman. And on the waterfront, it's highly unionized. And you only do one specific job. And it's quite demeaning unless you grew up in that atmosphere, that you only learn one aspect of any job. If you're as a steady job, as a longshoreman, you learn all around, except you do one specific job per day or per morning or afternoon, depending on your dispatch. And then the last 15 years of my working life, I became a parts man. They had asked me to become a parts man to protect jurisdiction of a job because of the technical training I had received in the 50s that carried me through all of that. It was something that... And then I come to retiring age. And because I had worked from 1955 and prior, prior to that it was part-time, summertime stuff. But from 1955 to 1999, I had worked every day that there was work.
Good.
Had only been out of a job, absolutely out of a job, for 3 days. From 1955 to 1999. Had never been without a job.
That's amazing. That's great.
So my family was quite concerned about my well-being, and said, if you quit, what are you going to do? You'll die if you don't do anything.
Yeah, right.
So they said, why don't you go sign up at UBC? It's just beginning, the language program. Yeah, you know how old I am. I don't need to go to school. But I signed up anyway.
Good.
And by the second month, the instructors were asking me to assist and teach. But I said, I refused, because it's not fair to me as a student, and it's not fair to the students that pay money, that I should stand up in front of the class, because I don't feel that I know anything to be a teacher. And they kept asking me for 2 years. And they finally, after I completed the second year, said, well, yeah, okay, now I've got enough experience in the sense of what happens in the classroom, what's expected of the students. I'll go help. So then now I'm an adjunct professor. They promoted me up to adjunct professor.
Are you making money again?
Well, I'm back making a little bit of money.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So it augments the pension.
Sure.
And it's good. I mean, like, it keeps me busy. It keeps me learning more and more about our language. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm able to share my knowledge with the young people, mm-hmm. whether they're from the Musqueam community or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I feel that as long as I can impart my knowledge of my language and culture to other people, other than myself and my immediate family, this culture and language will survive. Whether it survives, flourishes or not, that's another story.
It's hard to see.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So this is...
That's your life.
That's a
wonderful.
Short history of my life.
That's pretty good.
Many things... We were a cash poor community. Mm-hmm. However, very, very rich in teachings, in the knowledge that our people were willing to share, which I believe is fragmented today. Because we live more separate lives, and we live more cocooned lives. That each household has its own television, has its own radio, has its own electronic communications, that unless you really participate in the cultural activities, much of this knowledge is on the fringe of your life, where you don't really learn about it,
right.
About who you are or what you belong to, or what used to be in this area, you know, which a lot of people say, well, that's old stuff, you know.
Yeah, they don't
what do you
like
need
to
that
think
for?
About the old stuff, yeah.
And I say, well, if you don't know the history, our history, how do we prove that we were here before Europeans?
That's right.
Yeah. How do we do that? See, and you need to know all of the language stuff, the words we use to describe our history, the words we use to describe our culture, the words we use to describe historical, geographical sites, mm-hmm. our ethnobotany, our animals, the sea creatures, everything about us is tied up in the language.
Yeah, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's difficult to create or explain that this aspect of their life will bring everything into context in their minds if they're willing to sit and listen. It's kind of hard to slow them down.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Everything's so fast, huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
There was no airport here?
That's right.
As a boy?
That's right. Yeah.
Piper Cub now and then was a noisy, noisy thing.
Ah.
Yeah. Now it's continuous.
Yeah. Terrible.
There was no jetty.
That's right.
They were building the jetty when I was a boy.
And that was when I was trying to get that date right. Jetty, I thought it might have been when they were dredging.
They were dredging, yeah.
1919.
Uh-huh.
But you were born when?
1936.
Okay.
So they were still building the jetty.
Hmm.
It was sheet piling.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it was sheet piling.
Oh, yeah.
And around the 60s, mm-hmm. 50, late 50s, early 60s,
uh-huh.
they started building it with riprap and crushed rock, so that it's no longer a wooden structure, it's rock.
Okay. This sort of destroyed the marsh, I understand.
Yeah. Destroyed the marsh and there used to be used to be. It must be grass. Grow along here.
And you're trying to find out what kind of grass that was.
I don't know if it's a grass or a plant. That grew in this area, but once they built the jetty, the grass disappeared, gradually disappeared. Because before they actually built the jetty the way it is today, there was a sandbar across there, Iona Island, where squatters used to have their sheep. And I don't know if that was the slacks or not.
It could have been. They were there in 1950.
There were, the people used to row across to, there was a shelter there of driftwood, a driftwood shelter. And there was a herd of sheep out there. I don't know, how, maybe 10 or so, or maybe more, I don't know, but I'm using the number 10.
Yeah.
And they would go maybe once a day or a couple times a week across there to check on their sheep. Because it was, there was no causeway from Sea Island.
Right.
They blocked off that causeway. Or that slough area. But there was two guys, two men, would go back and forth to that herd of sheep across there.
Interesting.
So that's something I don't know.
Find out about that, you want that.
Yeah, because they used to cross from Celtic over across
that's
to,
right, right.
To the slough there. Where the slough, part of the slough is now.
Right.
McDonald's slough.
McDonald's slough, yes, that's right. I think Terry knows something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So because the slacks lived along the river.
That's right.
For
they
a
had
while.
A float house for a while.
Down there, but they were up this way somewhere for a while.
That's right.
Yeah. And then they moved that way.
Yeah.
And he used to climb up the hill to go to school.
Yeah. Past the Grant farm.
That's quite a while ago.
A lot of history. You know a lot of history. This is great.
Doesn't seem like a lot till I start talking.
That's right.
It goes more and more.
You could go forever, I think.
Yeah.
I better stop before I get too exhausted.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so that's a little bit of a